Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries.
We'll focus on. So the most important thing in cerebral palsy that you must remember and should never forget is that not every child with delayed milestones or intellectual retardation is a CP child. Cerebral palsy has a very specific definition, and I have seen a lot of patients mislabeled as cerebral palsy and is being used as a general trash bin kind of situation where anything that's not well explained is called CP. So cerebral palsy is a static encephalopathy which occurs due to any brain injury in a perinatal period, meaning it can occur from few weeks before birth, at birth or during birth, and up until 2 years after birth. That 2 years was selected randomly. You know, it does have some science and concept behind it, as I will explain, but to be honest, it was more of a term picked up by the experts defining the field of cerebral palsy and is almost arbitrary. So first thing that you have to figure out, any patient who is being presumed a cerebral palsy, if the problem started at birth or within 2 years after birth, which will be very important. You will be surprised how many cases you will see labeled as cerebral palsy who actually were fine for a few years up until 5, 7, 8 years after birth and then developed delayed in milestone or regression of milestone and are actually progressive. That's another important, as I said, the definition is static encephalopathy. So if you have a case where there have been a gradual progression, even if slow, then it's less likely to be cerebral palsy, which is more of a static encephalopathy. Once the injury has fully settled in, it does not progress any further. However, late age decompensation can be seen. So someone with static encephalopathy up until 20, 30 years of age is now noticing some worsening of his or her presentation or gait impairment or worsening of other features, which is likely due to decompensation. As we get older, our capacity to handle our disabilities goes down and we become more affected by our disability than before. So a good workup is important. It's important to make sure these are not inherited metabolic disorders or urea cycle disorders and so on and so forth. So for example, I've diagnosed patients with a proline dehydrogenase deficiency. I've diagnosed patients with Rasmussen encephalitis called a cerebral palsy. I've diagnosed patients with HSP, hereditary spastic paraplegia, who were considered as cerebral palsy, was just a young onset HSP, and so on and so forth. So after that discussion, the next question is that if you are quite sure this is cerebral palsy, then we use a very simplified definition or classification of cerebral palsy in movement disorders. We divide them based on movement disorders into dystonic cerebral palsy, choreoathetoid cerebral palsy, and spastic cerebral palsy. They have different etiologies and timing. So spastic cerebral palsy is classically due to periventricular hemorrhage. So it's a hemorrhagic stroke, and that happens usually during or just after birth and not late. And it's more often seen in premature kids because there is significant vascularization. Remember, brain is being formed inside out. So ventricular surfaces in the center of the brain are extremely vascular because that's where all the cellular formation happens, and then cell migrate towards the surface of the cortex to form the gyri, and a rest of that migration can cause heterotropia and is a cause of epilepsy. So those vascular zones, which are extremely productive, can bleed due to pressures of birth and right after birth, and especially so in premature children and a complicated birth. So that's a static encephalopathy. You can do an imaging and you can usually see a perivascular leukoencephalopathy or encephalomalacia from old strokes, but sometimes the strokes could be small enough that they heal and there is not very significant encephalomalacia to be seen from the prior strokes. The second one will be the dystonic cerebral palsy. Dystonic cerebral palsy is usually non-hemorrhagic stroke or ischemic infarcts, and also related to a lot of those perinatal infections of the children. So the TORCH complex often give basal ganglia lesion, and that results in dystonia. But a lot of time, dystonic cerebral palsy is actually later stroke. So it's not cerebral palsy, but it's a regular childhood stroke. Strokes in children often leads to dystonia of the opposite side. So hemidystonia with an onset before age 18 is classically stroke until proven otherwise. Strokes later in life usually give spasticity, and if they're in basal ganglia, they give Parkinsonism. So there's a difference between stroke symptoms, delayed symptoms based on the age of onset of having stroke. And then the third one, which is the most interesting, is the chorioethetoid cerebral palsy. In chorioethetoid cerebral palsy, the predominant feature is ethetosis. And I want to make a point that I only use the term ethetosis in patients with ethetoid cerebral palsy. The ethetosis is a very specific type of movement. It's a very distal chorea, which is very slow. Chorea compared to other chorea is less jerky, it is more rhythmic and flowing, and does not involve proximal limbs. It is classically seen in fingers in outstretched hand as piano playing movement. That kind of an ethetosis, which is much more smooth and dance-like, is different than most of other choreas like Sydenham chorea, Huntington chorea, which is more jerky, has more pauses in between, and has more of a feature of microdystonias as described by my mentor, Dr. Torres. So the true ethetosis is distal, is finger involvement, is less jerky, is more smooth and piano playing, and was actually described in these patients with cerebral palsy, which was due to cernicterus. So these children who were premature were having hyperbilirubinemia, and we didn't knew the phototherapy was effective back then. So these children were getting bilirubin deposit in basal ganglia, in globus pallidus and putamen, and that was causing this ethetosis with or without chorea. So this chorioethetoid cerebral palsy. I rarely use ethetosis in any other situation, and if I am seeing something that looks like ethetosis without ethetoid cerebral palsy, then I usually call them ethetoid movement or chorioethetoid movement and not use the word ethetosis specifically. So chorioethetoid cerebral palsy is later onset. It's few days to few weeks after birth. It gradually develops after the cernicterus happens. It can take few weeks to few months after the cernicterus to see the ethetoid cerebral palsy. Another important distinction to remember is that the spastic cerebral palsy, classically the one due to stroke, does not have any associated mental retardation. And the chorioethetoid cerebral palsy due to hyperbilirubinemia classically has associated mental retardation. And then dystonic cerebral palsy can be either way. It can fall on any end of the spectrum. So this is the movement disorder classification, and then spastic cerebral palsy can be paraplegic, quadriplegic, hemiplegic, kind of hemispastic kind of differentiation. It varies from stroke to stroke.
To learn more about the mini fellowship, visit our website for University of Nebraska Medical Center, Department of Neurological Sciences, where you can be part of the community and ask us questions. You can write to me on mdclinicforyou@gmail.com. It's mdclinic4u@gmail.com. And follow me on YouTube for longer discussions by searching for Danish Bahati, DANISH BHATTI. You can also find me on Twitter @DanishBahati_MD and on LinkedIn.